This is After the Credits, the home of correct movie opinions since 2007.
Yeah.
Welcome to episode 350 of After the Credits. I am one of your hosts, Maureen Antunes, joined today by the crew.
Steve Stebbing.
Bill Harris.
And Melissa McDowell.
How is everybody holding up?
I probably have a lot more energy than you do.
I'm on highs now. It's all fumes, guys. It's all
you're in the you're in the back flush now. Totally. No, it's just...
I think it's gonna, I have to power through till Thursday, and then I have like 4 days off, 5 days off. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, 5 days off.
For those of you listening, Marina just completed the 17th annual Spark Animation Festival.
Yeah. My 14th year.
Dang.
It was a banger, guys. Melissa was there. Thank you for supporting. You guys aren't in town, so it's totally valid. But it was quite honestly the best crowd I've had for a festival in probably like 10 years. Everybody was into it. Super high energy. That K-pop Demon Hunters sing-along screening was off the chain.
Yeah, that video you sent sounded pretty nuts.
It was insane. Mm-hmm. I was sitting in the room next door and there was just screaming coming from the theater. It was quite the energy. Like we were saying, it was, the vibes were vibing. It was very, very, very vibey. But all of the screenings were like that. It was the entire weekend was really great. Lots of high energy, people in great spirits. It's nice to be able to celebrate good things in this currently super shitty world.
And I heard the shorts package was pretty good.
It was decent. It was pretty decent, I gotta say. It was pretty decent. I got some good comments.
All I'm gonna say, didn't program it. That's all.
It's always funny to me. I'm like, so how do you guys program the films? I'm like, dude, you don't want to know.
No, you don't. You really don't.
It's always better to not know how the sausage gets made.
You don't want, well, but
just see, enjoy the delicious, delicious sausage.
So Dan and I had this conversation the other day because we've been obsessively watching Unreal, that WWE documentary. I still have zero interest to watch any WWE, like none. Like I do not care to watch an episode. That series is fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. It is so fucking good. I'm like, I would watch this instead of the show. Just give me this every night and I will watch this.
But Marina, weren't you like watching that F1 Netflix documentary?
I know.
And now you're like a total hardcore F1 fan?
I know, but I'm not feeling that same energy. I don't know why, dude.
It's not the time right now anyway.
Oh, okay. I don't know. But that documentary is really, it's really great. If you haven't seen it, even if you're not a WWE or wrestling fan, it's tops. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's
pretty good. Yeah.
Okay. But so we're going to start by talking about some movies. And then we're going to talk about more movies.
Whoa. Woo! Is there going to be a segue between these?
No.
No pivot, just movies.
Just movies. After the just movies. But we're going to start by talking about what was the movie of the week, which two of us have seen.
What did we decide on?
I don't even remember what it was.
The Long Walk.
Oh, it's Long Walk?
Which you guys have seen, right?
Yes.
I've seen it.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah. It's a, I don't know, easily. I'm going to say it right away. It's a fucking banger of a film. This is kind of like, because The Long Walk as a story holds a lot of resonance with me because it's part of like Stephen King's writing really pushed me into becoming a deeper reader and everything at a very young age. And the Bachman books was a very big one in my reading beginnings. And I knew Rage, which is about a high school shooter from the point of view of a high school shooter, would never get made. But The Long Walk, even though it was even dicier, less dicey to get made, but still really fucking rough to get made, I never thought it would really happen. I always had like dream casts in my head. But I think they did such a killer job of this one. JT Molnar's script is really, really good, focuses deeply on characters and gets you to like almost like love our two main characters, played by Cooper Hoffman and David Johnson. And Pete and Ray are, it's like a bromance, a quick bromance for the ages. And I also love that this is like a dystopian future, but it feels like one that like takes place like almost like right after like the Vietnam War. Like it feels kind of like in a stilled America, almost the one that Stephen King wrote the story in. And I really, really like the film. I think it's Francis Lawrence's best film he's ever done.
What? Dude, you're talking about the man that made Constantine.
I am talking about, I know Constantine is in his filmography, and it's honestly the only other film in his filmography that I would hold as like a masterpiece of a film, but Long Walk, I think, outdoes it. And I had no idea that I would see really great Stephen King outside of Mike Flanagan or Frank Darabont, but here we are. This is one of the defining Stephen King films, in my opinion.
Say it, Steve.
It's one of the best movies of the year.
There we go.
Big drop. I'm out.
Yeah. I was on the, I know this story to a T, and I was on the edge of my seat. This movie, it's so, so well done. And also so like beautifully shot too. Like it looks fucking great.
So I've seen the trailer and I knew what the film was. Like they're going to go for a walk, and I'm thinking, you know, it's a Hollywood movie. It's not going to be that bad. Like it's going to probably be maybe a sanitized version of the Bachman book. It's really not. This thing is really bleak. It's really bleak. And the fact that they don't shy away from the fact that, you know, after walking a long time, if you have to defecate and you can't go below 3 miles per hour, you just kind of have to shit yourself or stop and take a penalty. It's pretty harsh, and people are getting shot and lots of really bad things are happening, but it also helps you like the people more. It's the stuff they go through. It's pretty harsh. Also kind of helps that there's a really awesome villain who's not really a villain but kind of a villain in Charlie Plummer, who's just a complete asshole.
He is. Yeah,
he just does really mean things and he just talks a lot of shit, and you know, they try to redeem him a little bit, but he's still quite a kind of a prick. David Johnson is just an incredible actor.
He really is.
Yeah. You know, the first two seasons of Industry pretty much showed that. And, you know, we won't talk about the Alien movie, but he's pretty good. Cooper Hoffman, I think he's shown that he's definitely got his dad's chops. Maybe not as good as his dad, but still a pretty good actor. I didn't really expect a lot from this, to tell you the truth. And I was quite surprised by it. It's harsh, though. Like, people walked out of my screening. Like, they did not like this film. It is pretty harsh to watch at times. But
what were they expecting exactly? Yeah. I mean, I don't know from the trailer what you're going into.
But I think they, thought that it might be a sanitized version of it. But when people start getting their faces blown off, it becomes kind of a different film.
And when that person is Jojo Rabbit, it's a little like, holy shit. Also, title card of the year.
Yeah, I love that. That was good stuff. This was a bit of a surprise. I will give you, I wouldn't call it one of the best films of the year, but I think it's a pretty damn good film. Just as I said, just make sure you understand that this film is actually pretty bleak, and if you're not into that, you might not like it. It's pretty harsh.
Especially if you're not
prepared to see a movie about people walking
to their death.
To the death, to see who outlasts everyone else, and you're shocked that people are going to die in the movie. Maybe don't go see this movie.
No kidding.
Yeah. Don't make this a 2025 twofer with the Karate Kid
legends. Well, I don't know. You go bleak.
The Ben Wang double feature.
Just a thought though. Like if I'm gonna think I'm gonna be walking for two or three straight days, I might bring an extra pair of shoes. Just seriously.
It's true. People do that on the Camino. You'd think these guys would be better prepared.
Don't worry, I got cookies in my pocket, but I don't got an extra pair of shoes. No. It's cool.
Do you know who is heartbreaking with every single frame that they have in this film is Judy Greer. Can bring the just, oh my God, it's so heartbreaking. Like, yeah. I really have to stress how great this Molnar script is too. So
yeah, Molnar's on quite the little run here. Yeah, he's doing good work. Also, Mark Hamill's quite fun in this movie.
He's like a cartoon character, and I kind of appreciated that about him.
All he needed was a cigar in his mouth and chewing it, and it would have been great.
And the fact that they like cheated all the angles on them, that you never even saw shadow, like through the shadow behind his sunglasses, because he never takes the sunglasses off. There's even shot like him in nighttime and everything. He's still wearing a sunglass. Like, there's just such a cartoonish, faceless quality to his character that I just think really works. Even how monotone his performance really is, I think adds a lot to it.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good movie. I liked it quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. All right, adding this to the watch list.
Yeah,
the ever-growing watch list.
There you go.
Marina, have you watched Weapons?
Fuck no, I haven't watched anything. Listen, unless it's animated, I can tell you about the animated films I watched and programmed, because they were amazing. Because I programmed them. But other than that, no, I can't tell you anything because I have seen nothing.
Okay.
Well, I shouldn't say that. I watched really shitty TV. So.
Nice.
Because that's what you do when you need to unwind. You just watch really crappy TV. I wouldn't even say it's crappy. It's just kind of mindless television. But we can talk about that later.
I watched the first couple episodes of a new HBO show last night.
Which one?
The Mark Ruffalo one.
Task?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's from the makers of Mayor of Easttown.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not great either.
It's not as good as Mayor of Easttown?
No, that show is great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really great.
Yeah. What else have you guys seen?
I don't know if I got some of these. I feel like I talked about, like, I'm pretty sure I talked about Ballad of Wallace Island that I finally watched it, right? Yes. Like, I already said that. Did I talk about Highest to Lowest?
No, I was the only one that had seen it.
Right.
I've seen it.
I thought it was fucking great. And yeah, it's post 2000s, I don't connect a lot with Spike Lee. Like, he's been more hit than miss in that post 2000 like era, but Highest to Lowest I think is one of his best in the last 25 years for sure, because it is riveting. Like, it really, really gets you in. Really good character work from Denzel. I love the stuff with him and Jeffrey Wright. It's just two really great actors just popping lines to each other, and is really, really, really good. The film looks incredible. That drone shot all the way in the city to Denzel's apartment while he's on that phone call is so slick. Spike Lee always has something to say. I really dig that.
I actually thought some of the visuals were weird. I don't know, because I haven't seen any like production information on the project, but some of it to me looked like LED screens. Like, some of it did not look real, which threw me off because I didn't expect that. And I don't know if that's real or not, but something was just off.
The reverse shot on Denzel on the balcony was definitely green screen. Like, if I felt it as soon as the camera switched, I felt that switch.
But I don't think it's green screen. I think it's LED walls.
Oh, okay. Well, that would make sense too. But the scene with the scene in the recording studio with Denzel and A$AP Rocky is fucking fire. It's so good.
Yeah, that scene is amazing.
It's so strong.
I even thought the scene at the end. Oh, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
The scene at the end with the pre credit thing where he goes to the prison. I thought that was kind of genius too. Like, really great, smart writing, but that's what you expect.
Yeah.
Specifically, anyways, the thing that threw me off about this movie was the music. The soundtrack really threw me for a loop. I liked it. For me, it just kept taking me out of the movie. Like, it just felt like it was going against what was on screen, which is maybe the point. It just really didn't work for me. And I've listened to it since, and I don't hate it. It's just, it feels off.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm really surprised with how much I really enjoyed this film and how high that it like ranks in my year, because I never would have thought that this film would end up in that category, because I don't generally hold Spike in that high of a regard as far as like what I enjoy in a year. I have a friend of mine that we've been friends since junior high, and he's a huge Spike Lee guy. So, he was even more over the moon about this movie. So it was, he talked me down a little bit because I was like, you're a little crazy about this one. But, yeah, I really liked it. So I was kind of surprised by it. Did I talk about Splitsville?
No.
Splitsville, Michelangelo Covino and Kyle Marvin, they did a movie called The Climb. I think it was 2019, which is a hilarious film that just feels like a subtle comedy that slides down the hill into farce. And that's what Splitsville really is as well. Kyle Marvin and Ariana Arjona are like a couple that's been married for under a year. And she says that she's basically after a traumatic event, she says that on their way to their friend's house, which is Michelangelo Covino and his wife, Dakota Johnson's character. She's like, I have to say it now. I want a divorce. I've been sleeping with other men. And he basically books it. Ends up at his friend's house, and they let loose that they're in an open marriage, and that's why it makes it work. And then the best friend sleeps with the wife after a night of drinking, and it causes chaos. And this movie is in my opinion, this is the comedy of the year. And it's also an indication that you could have a terrible year in which you start off the year making a film like Madame Web, but just know that the next year after, we got you, kid. Everything's going to be okay, because you got Materialists and Splitsville, which is just like a fucking phenomenal back-to-back. Like,
yeah,
way to she's fucking go.
The new poster child for modern dating.
Yeah, I love it because she works so well in this film. This film is hilarious. I drove out to Kelowna to see this film, and it was like one of those, like, I'm kicking the seat in front of me laughing so hard. Like, it's just such a ridiculously funny film. And I really, really can't recommend it enough. It is hysterical. It's like the little film that could, because I don't think anybody knows about this film really, unless the people that are paying attention and the cinephiles and stuff, they know this film.
You said Dakota Johnson. I'm like, yeah, of course.
There we go. Yeah, exactly.
Girl crush.
So let's move on to Girl Boss. Because I watched Swiped, the Whitney Wolf Heard story with Lily James.
Who I haven't seen this yet, but I want to see.
She basically helped create Tinder, and then because she's in the bro heavy tech world of apps, she gets fucked out of the credit of creating it. And then they basically smear her really badly on the way out. And through this adversity, she ends up making another dating app called Bumble. And I like the information, the story is interesting. The delivery is really not there. And it's unfortunate because it comes from, Rachel Goldenberg, I think her name is. She did a film called Unpregnant with, Haley Lou Richardson that I thought was really cute.
Wonderful.
And funny. It's a really, really solid film. And I was expecting something not so cookie cutter and deliriously girl boss sometimes, and I don't want to use that as a detriment, but it feels there's too many montages in this movie. For one, like, it's hard to take it seriously when I keep thinking about like Legally Blonde and shit. Like, we need better substance behind this film, and it just feel like it really didn't have it. But it does also feature a little delightful performance from a show favorite named Dan Stevens.
Nice.
And
Dan.
Who has an accent in this one and is just absolutely delightful.
When does Dan Stevens not have an accent? Like, I know. He really rarely plays himself.
Yeah, he loves to play with that stuff. It makes me think of, what was the Hunter Schafer one? Cuckoo.
Oh.
Yeah.
Something I should watch with Dan, because he is still angry about that movie.
About Cuckoo? Like, when they revealed the monster, or like the weird thing in the film, I laughed. I was like, what is that? Is it a woman in a trench coat? What is going on? I got to see the latest Ethan Coen and Tricia Moore film, Honey Don't. And Margaret Qualley is adorable, and I could, if there was a more Honey O'Donoghue stories to tell, I might be into it, but I feel like the rest of the cast around her really never seems to show up, and this story feels like a Coen reject story, like really at the end of it. Just completely predictable. But again, like, it's just Margaret Qualley shows that she can really carry a lot on her shoulders to a certain point. So it upped her star power in my mind, but yeah, not great. One that I felt like was getting cookie cutter, but then really came through in a third act and knocked me on my ass, was a film called My Dead Friend Zoe. With Sonequa Martin-Green and Natalie Morales. Basically, this film's about PTSD. Sonequa Martin-Green is playing an Afghani war veteran that's now at home and has the ghost of her platoon mate, Zoe, constantly in her life as I guess a tangible spirit, and she's just constantly feeling more detached from the world and from her family due to something that she can't even seem to talk about in her group, which is headed by a Morgan Freeman's character. And her grandfather in this is played by Ed Harris, who was a Vietnam War vet. So there's some really interesting talks about PTSD between the wars, because Vietnam War vets, or at least his character in the, never regarded it as PTSD. Of course, they called it different shit back then, but then they were like, talk to your VA and just soldier on type thing. But also like the way the soldiers were received by the general public upon coming home, like when she came home, she has like a whole lineup of people there to greet her and thank you for your service and all this stuff. And then when he comes home from Vietnam, he's getting like spit on and like regarded as a baby killer and all that kind of shit. So it's like they both have different experiences in that sense. And I thought that was like a really interesting aspect to pull at. But there's some reveals in the third act that totally caught me off guard and made this film jump up a lot in its rating, in my opinion. I don't want to give any of that stuff away because I think it was really, really well done. And the filmmaker behind this one is a guy named, let's see. Of course, I can't find it. Kyle Houseman Stokes, he wrote and directed this one based off a short film. It was a big hit at Sundance last year. There was a big bidding war on it. And I was, for the first bit, I was wondering why there was such a bidding war on this film, but it really comes through in the end. And it has a really great message about getting a film like this out there to the people that need to hear it, to see it. And then you can refer to these nonprofit organizations supporting the VA and everything. And then the cynical thing in me was like, Yeah, but how much of their funding has been cut now because of this shitty fucking administration? So cynical me always comes through, but I think it's really worth checking out. And I'm going to trample on some of Bill's ones probably now.
Go for it.
All right. So, Monkey Paw Productions.
Oh, you watched him, didn't you?
Yeah, I think they got a stumble here.
No, it looks so cool.
For a large part, I think this film is working. I think the third act is where it just kind of wet farts all over itself. And as gonzo as it goes and as cool as it is to look at, it just felt flat. This film feels really shallow. Like this is football religion. Like this is like, that's kind of the two things that are running cohesively with each other in this film. I will say this film is infinitely watchable and must watchable because Marlon Wayans is so fucking good in it, because he is really, really goddamn good. And as like kind of like a blank slate foil for him, Tyreek Withers, I think, plays this film the way he should, because he's almost that precocious, like, I'll learn anything from my idol type thing. So it kind of works for this film. The other performance in this movie that I really love is Julia Fox. I think she is so much fun in this movie. For however little time she gets in this film is really great. And her exit made me laugh really hard in theaters. I'm wondering, was Jordan Peele on like set on board, like on this film for the entire production? Because there's so much of this film that feels like it was just lifted out of like Jordan Peele's brain or something. Like even some of these like mascot designs and stuff like this, the aesthetic, it just feels very, very Jordan Peele. So it's not a surprise. It's not a surprise that people are thinking that he directed this film, not that he just produced it.
Also doesn't help that his name's on the top of the poster.
Yeah, I think it really missed out. So people are like, oh, Jordan Peele directed a shitty movie. I don't think it's shitty. I just don't think it's enough. Really, that's kind of my thoughts on it.
Oh, that's too bad, because it looked so cool.
It does. Yeah. It really does.
I'll talk about it in a bit.
Okay. Let's get this out of the way. Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey. I know Bill wants to eviscerate this film. I kind of didn't mind playing around in the metaphor that is this film. All the lines are so grandiose and goofy and stuff. And there is a lot of goofiness about this film. Some straight up goofiness when it comes to like Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who I actually really fucking enjoyed in this movie. I think she's adorable. And Koganada makes it gorgeous. The whole film is really, really gorgeous. And I brought my wife to this film, and many points I looked over at her and she's wiping tears away. So it really worked on her. This movie really big time worked for her. I just kind of had a fun time with it. And I just, you know, it's just kind of one of those weird flighty existential films, and I don't know, I was just on board for the ride. Maybe it just hit me at the right point. And then the last thing I watched, I just watched it last night, was Scarlett Johansson's directorial debut, Eleanor the Great, with June Squibb playing a woman whose best friend has just passed away, and her best friend was a Holocaust survivor. And in her grief, in her just kind of wandering around being a weirdo, she's someone that likes to fib here and there, ends up appropriating her best friend's story at a Holocaust support group, and it spirals out of control. June Squibb's fucking adorable. The story seems a little fucking weird, though.
Sounds a little weird,
right it's hard to describe and be like, it's, oh, like, it's so lighthearted. It's like
Fight Club but with June Squibb.
Yeah exactly.
does she have a 20-minute conversation with Malcolm McDowell at the end?
No.
Then it sucks.
Fair enough.
Yep. Is that it?
Oh, that's it. Yeah, that was the last thing.
Who wants to go?
I have nothing, so go for it.
I'll go. I'll go. Why not? I liked Splitsville. I don't think I was quite as high on as Steve was. The whole movie really depends on if you think that Michael Cimino can get Dakota Johnson.
And can he?
No.
I don't actually know what he looks like. There's, so I have no idea.
There's so many, like, even in the beginning of the movie where what's his name goes upstairs to take a shower because he had to swim through the lake to get there. And he's having a shower, and then they all get in. They're checking him for ticks and stuff. So he jumps in the shower with him. Then also Dakota Johnson's in the bathroom, and he's just showering. He's like, can you leave me the load? They're like, not right now.
Also, could Cal Marvin get Adria Arjona?
I don't know.
Like it's another thing that you got to suspend belief. But, you know, it's a fun movie. Like, it's really funny. And the fact that everything just kind of goes all over the place, it's quite good. Mm-hmm. There's a scene where the two male leads fight. It's pretty funny.
That was where I was dying. I was dying, especially when they get to the kitchen. They both pick up knives, and then in unison, they go, "No knives!" and they put them down. Fucking.
And so good. Steve brought it up, but something happens at the beginning, and Cal Marvin's character just starts running and like runs to this house, and it's like he's on an adventure, like he's like swimming through lakes, and it's hilarious. Yeah, it's a good movie. I thought it was pretty fun. A buddy of mine saw that at Cannes and said it was his best favorite film of Cannes. I'm just
really
like okay,
maybe it's sure. Maybe it's a theater experience too, though. Like if your audience is. Well, was your like I saw it with like two other people in the audience. Actually,
nobody was there.
Yeah. And which, I was the only one laughing.
Yeah.
And I was laughed. Laughing. Like
I laughed a lot. Yeah, I thought it was quite fun. Adria Arjona's ex-boyfriends.
Oh my god, the collection of them.
Yeah,
oh,
so good. So good. Yeah.
And then there's a quick bit with Nicholas Braun at the end of the movie that slayed me. It just absolutely slayed me. So
anybody who wants to see this, it's on VOD next week.
Yeah, worth watching.
Yeah,
100% worth watching.
I would say it's definitely worth watching. I saw Hamilton on the big screen. Still pretty good. Yeah. They had a nice little retrospective documentary before it. It was quite fun. I liked it.
My wife says, do you want to watch Hamilton? My answer is always, now? It's like 3 hours long.
Yeah, I just have to say, is there a better comedic force than David Diggs in Hamilton? He's just magic.
He is
absolute magic. Yeah,
I think Blindspotting might be one of my favorite films of all time. So I'll always have a heart for David Diggs.
Yeah, my other podcast partner, Adrian, had that as his number one film of that year. So shout out
to
Adrian.
Nice. Blindspotting is an incredible film.
Was that the last time you guys did a top 10?
Pretty much. Yeah. It's still coming, damn it.
Was that a dig, Melissa? This is very unlike you.
It was an innocent question.
It is our shtick. We'd never record.
Adrian, we miss you.
Yes. I talked to him like 2 hours ago.
I don't get to hear his velvet voice anymore.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Yeah. I saw Lurker, Alex Russell's new film. I liked it, but there's some problems. Everybody in this film is really unlikable, and it kind of drags the film down a little bit. It's still really watchable. Theodore Pellerin is just a kind of an asshole, and he plays it really well. And Archie Madegwe is also an asshole, and he also plays it really well. So they kind of go off each other, and it's quite good. But I just wish I could had somebody to get onto here. Like I was just, it's good.
Isn't that an Alex Russell thing though?
It kind of is.
Yeah, but he's just like his beef is like fuck both of these people.
Yeah, you know? By the end of the film, I'm just like, I don't give a shit what happens to any of these people. Like, just they could all die in a car crash and credits. Like, that'd be cool. Yeah, but it's still a watchable film. It's decent. And yeah, a couple good young actors just going at it. I quite liked it. I watched, I don't know why, I watched the 2-part Netflix series, AKA Charlie Sheen. It's not very good. I didn't know Charlie Sheen had AIDS. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
I guess that I learned something. Charlie, get this. Charlie Sheen in the 90s, kind of an asshole.
Oh, no, really?
Shocker.
Not just I know. The 90s, though.
No, but like, yeah. Like super asshole.
I don't think it ended at the end of the decade.
No, but like in the 90s, super asshole. Yeah, he was, and he seems like he's kind of got his head on right now. Like they interview him, he seems very coherent, and he said he's been sober for like 8 years, and which you never know.
But still an asshole. So
yeah, so yeah, it's a fluff piece. But yeah, I watched it. It was two parts. It was like 3 hours of my life I'll never get back. But yeah, I learned. Yeah,
watched Hamilton again.
I could have.
Yeah, now. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, don't want to give away my shot. The Long Walk was good. Spinal Tap 2, The End Continues was good, but not great, which is more than I wanted. I thought they were going to fuck it up somehow, and it's still pretty damn watchable. The characters are still there. The music's quite fun, and the cameos are great.
Nice.
Yeah, it's quite fun. Elton John's really good. he's really good. And Paul McCartney's got some pretty awesome lines.
Oh,
and Chris Addison from The Thick of It and In the Loop.
Hell yes.
He's always incredible. I love that guy.
Yeah.
Nobody saw this. I think it did like a million at the box office. And when I saw it, I was the only person there. Aww. So that kind of makes me sad. I'm sure it'll be on VOD pretty quick. It's too bad Steve didn't get to see it, because I think he probably wanted to see it pretty bad.
I did. I wasn't able to find the opportunity to get out there to see it.
It's not playing in my town. They marketed this very well.
They didn't. No.
I think there was no real buzz about this coming out or anything. And yeah, I think it's just really
Fathom
strange.
Entertainment or something like that.
Oh, it's the
Canada that put it out.
Yeah, so that company, they do like event screenings. They don't really do theatrical releases.
Yeah.
Which is too bad. I did order Spinal Tap on 4K during the last Criterion sale.
So. Nice. Yeah.
There is that.
Too. Now there's going to be Pee-wee's Big Adventure on.
I can't spend Criterion. Any more money, guys. This is.
I actually got December. Some mail. I got some mail out there. Pretty sure it's my Flow 4K.
That's the other disc I bought.
Yeah. I watched Vice is Broke. The new Eddie Huang documentary about the online /TV.
Oh, yeah. This is on my watch list.
Yeah.
Shane Smith, asshole.
No kidding.
Gavin McInnes, super asshole.
Yeah.
Those guys are all douchebags.
Yeah. It's weird, too, because Vice used to actually be pretty cool. They had some pretty decent documentaries about, like, the ones about drugs, like, they were great. Like
they did some really good investigative work for a number of years, and then the whole thing just imploded.
Yeah.
Isn't Dark Side of the Ring came from them?
Yeah.
Originally. Like Jason Eisner.
Yeah, there's some good stuff on Vice.
Yeah.
But we all know what Gavin McInnes did after Vice. And Shane Smith ran into the ground, and it was valued at like $4 billion, and he didn't sell it. They went bankrupt. Congratulations. Disney made an offer to buy Vice for $4 billion and he turned it down. Congratulations.
Well, I'm okay with that, actually.
Yeah. No,
Disney overlords do not Disney. Really need to know fucking everything.
Yeah. And fuck Disney too. Him is a complete waste of my time. I was waiting for that film to get going. Like it needed something. Mm-hmm. It's really pretty. That movie looks like $1 billion. It's really pretty. Like,
I love his compound.
Yeah, Marlon Wayans has this compound out in the desert. It's like underground, and it's like this like weird looking spaceship looking thing. And I'm like, this movie is beautiful. And Marlon Wayans is 53 years old.
Yeah, and he is like in tip top condition.
Yeah, he's just jacked, and he looks like he's like 22. And Tyreek Withers is quite fun, and Julia Fox is freaking phenomenal.
She's so great. That when she quotes Biggie, I think that was Biggie, I think. Anyways.
Yeah. So good. Yeah. But yeah.
She's Julia.
I just kept on waiting for it to get, it's just like the same shit. It's all done in like chapters, and it's just like, do something. Then the end gets really all over the place and stupid. And I didn't like it at all. I was quite disappointed with that one. Yeah, that's the first strike for actually. I'm not the biggest Get Out fan either, so I'll say that too. Okay. There's my hot take for the episode.
There you go.
That one you're just wrong about.
I agree. Melissa and I are on the same page.
What can I say? I got a lot of shit for that one a few years ago.
You and me.
As I said, I don't know if I said it on the show or before the show. Big Bull, Beautiful Journey is one of the worst films of the year. It's just a complete mess. Two pretty actors who have no chemistry, a script that is just has no idea what it's doing. It's pretty. I'll give it that. It's shot really quite well. I thought Phoebe Waller-Bridge was terrible. Her lines just seemed out of place. Kevin Kline is Kevin Kline. I will never say a damn thing wrong about Kevin Kline. He's incredible. I love that guy. He needs to work more. This movie is a complete disappointment. This guy made Columbus.
Yeah.
Like, after Yang.
Yeah.
This is a complete mess. And it's obvious that they had no idea what to do with this because this had the worst trailer of the year, too. The trailer was an absolute mess.
Yeah.
And I heard that this was supposed to come out like last year. It's just been delayed. They had no idea what to do with this. They dumped it in September and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And then, holy shit, Demon Slayer opened up to $70 million and that movie did $4.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Demon Slayer was always going to make. Demon Slayer was always going to own the box office, though.
I know, but it's just nobody wanted to see that movie, and it died, and people are going to lose their jobs over that movie. It's not good. It's cool that Steve liked parts of it or whatever. I thought that's fine. As I said, it's a really pretty film. Not for me. I did not like it at all. And after the previous conversation last episode where Marina was talking about a certain Astron 6 film that we saw at the Whistler Film Festival, I rewatched Manborg.
Of course you did.
Oh, Manborg.
This is my shout out to Dan because I was at that screening too. And Dan just absolutely hated Manborg.
His brother hated it more.
I know.
Comes up.
I still think that movie is quite fun.
That experience is still one of that and the movie out here are the two best experiences of the Whistler Film Festival.
Yeah,
Not because they were good. Neither of them were good.
and the thing is, I think I liked it then too, and had a big argument with Dan about it. So, it's quite fun.
Heated very often, but when he does, he really gets. Yeah,
I wish Viff had more midnight movies like Manborg.
You may get one this year.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to talk about that one. I think I'm embargoed. But I watched a bunch of Viff stuff too, and I can't talk about it because I'm embargoed. But
same.
Yeah, but. Yeah, that's it for me. Manborg forever.
That's what. Another thing about him, as cast wise, Tim Heidecker and Jim Jefferies.
Yeah, Jim Jefferies.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I kind of dug Jim Jefferies' character in the film. I kind of like as they open up his character a bit more, you're like, what the fuck is going on? Because he's like he's the sports doctor.
Yeah,
that lives on compound.
He came on the screen. I'm like, is that Jim Jefferies?
Yeah.
what is he doing in this?
I only knew about it because I follow him on social media. So he was plugging this movie for a few weeks. But the Tim Heidecker one, I didn't know. And he plays the perfect, sleazy character. I fucking love Tim Heidecker. Eric forever.
There's a comedy special where Jim Jefferies destroys Oscar Pistorius for 20 straight minutes, and it's the greatest thing I've seen in comedy in a very long time. Fuck off.
Jim Jefferies is one of my favorite comedians.
Yeah, yeah, quite good.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's it for me.
Melissa, is anything you've seen that you'd like to shout out?
I didn't look at your letterbox, so I don't know if you have a capital F film this time. I apologize. I should have looked.
Well, sometimes I withhold things just because I'm worried that Bill's going to stalk my letterbox. And then I have a whole argument against me prepared for our show.
you think a lot of me. I'm not doing that.
I've been pre-watching some stuff for VIP too. And I was not informed of an embargo. So
just go ahead. Let it have it.
So I will just say that if you can make space to see Blue Heron, which is Sophie Rumvari's first narrative feature film that's opening at VIFF. It also played at TIFF. It got really good reviews at TIFF, and I was excited to see it on the VIFF lineup as well. She is a filmmaker that's known by lots of folks in Vancouver because she is from out here. So, and the film is beautiful. I think it's absolutely beautiful, and I think it's a real piece of art. She's been doing interviews talking about reading Cassavetes on Cassavetes the entire time that she was filming this. And that influence definitely comes across in this film. I would also say that I pick up on some very heavy Agnès Varda vibes from this film as well. I loved this. I thought it was really, really beautiful. It is a soft, slow film about a family. And about mental illness and how that is dealt with in terms of resources for families. And some of that is hard, depending on what your experience is. But I just think this is a really beautiful film. And as a first feature, it's a banger. Like, watch out for Sophie, because she's going to do really amazing things.
I have a feeling that's going to be a pretty big film at VIFF.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that probably it's sold out. It might be sold out. Maybe they've released some extra tickets because I know she's got a lot of fans here. So, but if you get a chance to see it, I am sure it's one of the films that VIFF will bring back at some point as well. So I would just put it on your watch list because it's a pretty great little film to watch. And I'd also say this also opened at TIFF, so I don't feel like I'm giving away any spoilers talking about it. Modern Horror, which I love Andrea Wareham. So she wrote a book with the same name, which is also a really great, she's doing a lot to try and normalize sex work and try to bring out these conversations in the open to make sex work safer for the people who practice it. And I think that her work is really important and it's really great. And she does it with such a cheeky sense of humor. She's also drop dead gorgeous, very easy on the eyes. So it's not hard to watch an entire documentary of her. Some people might know her as, so she was actually in, Paying for It, the Sukyun Lee film about, that was based on the comic book by Chester Brown, about his experiences paying for sex. And she ends up playing his girlfriend in that film, who is a sex worker. And then also, she was the technical advisor on Anora as well. So she has a whole bunch of cred in movies, and this is finally her own movie and her own story. And it's really compelling. And she interviews her mom at one point. And it's pretty great. It's going to end up on Crave. So I think a lot of people are going to be able to watch it. And it's entertaining and lighthearted enough, but also really digs into some of the risks and issues and stigmas around sex work. But I think in a really fun and approachable way. So hope lots of people get to see that one. So then what else have I seen? I watched Weapons.
Yay!
I will say Barbarian for me hit way harder. I think because it was just like so out there and unexpected. I was expecting a certain level of crazy from Weapons, and Kreger's delivered on that. So great. I did think that maybe jumping around between character viewpoints, I'm not sure. It made the film choppier, I think. I think it affected the flow a little bit for me. But I will say that I'm never, ever, ever going to be able to see a kid running through a park with airplane arms again and not think about this movie.
To George Harrison. My favorite needle drop of the year, by the way. Mm-hmm. So good.
Yeah.
And I mean, Aunt Gladys is fantastic. And can I just say for a second, like between this and Barbarian, I'm finding it really interesting that the sort of leaf motif here is the monstrous female.
Yeah.
and so now I'm really curious. What are you doing next, Zach?
Resident Evil.
Resident Evil.
Oh, yeah.
I still think my favorite scene of the year is him beating up Abrams. It's like just constantly hitting him. He gets back up. Ah, punch. Ah, punch. Stay down, buddy. Or something like that. Yeah, such a great movie. The fact that he's able to hold that film together in such a masterful way just kind of shows that he knows what he's doing. And that film probably shouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But it does quite well.
Yeah, it was definitely worth watching. It's one for the genre heads. It's definitely not. If you walked out of The Long Walk, you are not going to stick around for Weapons. Let's just say. what else did I watch? Oh, I rewatched Midsommar because, you know, every now and again, you got to revisit Queen Flo at her best. I was really struck by how many people are in that movie that have since that movie like hit so big, like Will Poulter and it was interesting to revisit, and I forgot how much of it. I think what I love about Ari Aster films is that they're really rewarding on reviewing. Because there's so many Easter eggs. There's so much setup that you don't get the first time that you watch the film. And so it's really rewarding rewatching his movies.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Which version of the film did you watch?
Whatever is on Amazon Prime.
Okay, so there's a director's cut, which is like 20 minutes longer.
Oh.
And I like it better, so... I don't know if you saw that version, but it's more violent, if you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
I really love that shot in the doubling shot in the trees. Let me see your sister in the tree. It's so great. I love that shot.
My favorite shot of the whole film is when they get to Sweden and the camera goes upside down.
Mm, yeah.
It's like right off, right there. You just know.
Mm-hmm.
It's about to get weird.
Things are about to get weird. Yeah, and it's not the acid trip, or the mushroom trip.
Nope.
Okay, what else did I see? Okay, so I went to see History of Sound. So I was explaining in our little preamble chat. I figured that I should go see this because it's been open in limited markets, and since I live in one of those limited markets, I wanted to go see it. And I was really excited for this because I love Paul Mescal and Josh O'Connor. And to be honest, and I loved the fact that this was set in a time where they were doing folk song collecting across kind of the rural South of America. That kind of niche thing is really interesting to me. I've done a bunch of research into folk music history in Canada, and so song collecting is it was just an interesting premise for the setting of this love story, essentially. I gotta say, I really, really, really wanted to like this. It kind of didn't work for me. And I think, sadly, as much as I love him, I think it's Paul Mescal. I just am not sure. Like, this is supposed to be the love of your life, like the love of your life. Like, everything else falls flat in comparison to it. And it changes your entire life. And I'm just not sure that I felt that from him, like that it went there, that it went strongly enough there. So that's a little bit sad to say. I just think it was a bit too muted. So at times, this film feels quite slow. It's sort of like the experience that you and I had, Marina, watching On Swift Horses, where it's like you want this to hit and there's like something there, but it's just not quite
doesn't deliver.
It's just not quite getting there, like with the pacing or the oomph behind it, I guess. I don't know. It just doesn't like fully grab you.
This was him. That's what Bill and I were saying about him.
Yeah. So yeah, I really wanted to like this a lot. I think it's pretty. It's two pretty, very pretty boys. I think Josh O'Connor is great. He does a lot here without words, which I'm always fascinated by actors who can have so much play out on their face without any dialogue. And I think he's just so great at that. And this is his year. There's so many films coming out this year with him in them, and he deserves all of this attention. So
yeah, word out of TIFF is that he steals Knives Out.
Wouldn't doubt
it. He steals the trailer.
Yeah. So, and plus, I'm pretty sure Paul Mescal's okay. Hamnet won the People's Choice Award at TIFF. I think they're on their way to an Oscar. So,
yeah, but that's the thing. I think when Mescal's great, he's really good. And then sometimes he's Gladiator 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
So
I couldn't believe when I was watching the Gladiator 2, I'm like, this is the After Sun guy. This is the All of Us Strangers guy.
And normal people. And that's the thing. Like sometimes he's just really, really terrific. And that's why I thought like the emotional resonance here would be really strong with him. But I think that's kind of what didn't work for me. I didn't get enough of that from him. And then finally, I'm going to end with a film I saw at Spark. I Am Frankelda, which is Mexico's first feature length stop motion animation. And it was wild and very fun. I thought it was really fun. It was for me super nostalgic for Neverending Story, because there's that same sort of premise of there's like the imaginary world and the human world, and the human imagination feeds this world and it feeds the other world, and the imaginary world is in danger and it needs to be saved by a young human. Enter this outcast girl who spends all of her time writing stories. I thought it was really charming. The only maybe criticism I have of it is I think the same criticism I have of a lot of modern animation that's very heavily influenced by video game culture is that sometimes the sequences are just too fast for me to like follow. And I wish that they would slow down, especially when it's stop motion animation, because you guys have done so much work. Just slow it down just a little bit. But then, I don't know, maybe I'm just an old person who doesn't get like what works for pacing for young people these days. Maybe I should stop shaking my fist at clouds. I don't know.
I really loved it too. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was really nice to be able to screen that for the local audience, because it hadn't, I think it was the Western Canadian premiere. The only other place it had played in Canada was in Fantasia. So it was great for us to be able to get that. It's a really fun movie. And I love the musical numbers. They just come out of nowhere. Super charming, super charming. The only movie I will mention out of our awesome Spark lineup is Space Cadet, which is Eric San's feature film debut, aka Kid Koala. So it's an adaptation of a graphic novel that he wrote in like 2011, shortly after the death of his, I think he said it was his mother or grandmother. I don't remember. It's a silent movie, and it is in not thematically, but in the emotional gut punch, it is very, very similar to another animated silent film that we all love, Robot Dreams. This movie is, it kills. It everyone cries. It is so cathartic. It's really beautiful. It's just lovely. I have a feeling it's going places. Just saying.
Speaking of crying, a friend of mine was at TIFF, and supposedly the press screening of Hamnet, there was like a river of tears. River. Great. Can't wait.
Thanks, Chloe.
And that's all I got.
Nice.
Can I just say, I love that Chloe Zhao is doing Hamnet and then also working on the Buffy the Vampire Slayer reboot.
I know.
What it's finally going to be good. No, I shouldn't say finally.
Marina.
Dude, guys, have you tried rewatching Buffy?
There's parts of it that didn't age well, but
no,
there's still
a lot of it didn't age well. Like a lot of it didn't age well.
I saw the TV glow me.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, dude, it's not good.
You never washed it to begin with. So how
this
you
is the problem. This is the problem.
If you didn't have the initial connection to it, maybe it's just really hard to. But I think that's part of the argument for why they're rebooting it.
Which is great. Yeah. I am ready for a Buffy. I mean, I love the Buffy movie. Don't get me wrong.
Oh.
And I love the concept. I never got into the show. And so now when I try to watch it, it's like, this is so dated and I'm just really not into it. So yeah, but I'm ready for.
Where do you like kind of like that about Veronica Mars and then you watched it?
But Veronica Mars is legitimately awesome.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest television shows of all time.
But it's aged far better because it also doesn't have vampires in it with really like, you know, cheesy makeup and shit. I don't know. Like, it just does not aged well. I know. Something about it just doesn't work for me.
Some vampires which is don't weird age well.
Well, yeah, right.
But they're sparkly.
Look
makeup.
At you. Look at you being all smart and shit.
Pedro Pascal's in it.
A lot of people
are
in it.
He's a baby.
Yeah,
I know. The other day baby. I saw an Instagram video of stars that were on the X-Files before they were big. Did you know that both Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston were on the X-Files?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's never worked for me. So I'm very happy that.
God, I love a Twilight cheap shot. Good one, Steve.
Hey, all you want. Connective tissue. Aaron Paul is also in the music video for Korn's Thoughtless.
Nice. Speaking of Twilight, there's a Twilight marathon in Victoria when we're at VIFF. Oh no, I'm gonna miss it.
Oh, I know.
Did you just do the YouTube one?
I watched a bunch of it. Except I turned it off after the first ad. I'm like, fuck, you're giving me ads? Of course, somebody's gonna pay for this shit.
YouTube.
Yeah, exactly.
The commentary was not as glorious as I thought it would be, so I wasn't really vibing. It wasn't K-pop demon hunters and kids screaming at the screen. So
no,
not the same. Not the same. All right. Let's shift gears an hour in. and we at the end of the last episode, we mentioned that we were going to come back with a bit of a preview for VIFF and things that we're excited about. So we have a top five list, right, Bill?
Ish.
I have backup films in case people bring something up. I want to be able to bring something fresh. So I put 10 down. Backup. Also, before we start, last episode I bitched about VIFF running out of tickets. VIFF released a bunch of tickets for big films like 2 weeks later, and a bunch of my friends got tickets. So kudos to VIFF. I'm not afraid to tell them they did good. If you do good, I will tell you you did good. And that is awesome. My friends can now go and see movies they wanted to see. And that's awesome.
I haven't done a schedule, so...
I'm living on the skin of my pass.
Yeah, and listen, Steve, you and me are like, I haven't even really looked at the schedule. I'm like, maybe I'll get to see these things.
I didn't get in time for any of the tickets, right? So it's like...
I'm hoping that I have some titles on my things I'm excited about that nobody else wants to fucking see.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm the exact opposite. I have tickets for stuff that's big, and if I can get a ticket for my pass, and if one of my friends gets shut out, I have a ticket.
I appreciate that, Bill.
So
that might come through me and Chloe.
Yeah,
over the festival.
I know enough people who are doing the same thing. So if anything happens, we probably can bail you out.
Okay, good, good, yeah. Good, good.
Okay, so how do we want to do this? Do you just want to rattle off the movies?
Yeah. All right. Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go first.
I'll do it. I'm looking forward to this. If I had legs, I'd kick you. Here, Rose Byrne's really great in it. Conan O'Brien plays an antagonistic therapist, and I think that's also really funny. And I just saw A$AP Rocky in a movie, so why not watch him in a movie again? Really? This is an opportunity to see two Linklater films at a festival. Because both Blue Moon and Nouvelle Vague are playing this festival, and I'm going to see those a day apart from each other. So that's very cool. I'm excited about that for sure. There's a new Dardans film, Young Mothers.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that one for sure. Park Chan-wook, No Other Choice. Definitely looking forward to that. I'm going to be on the Sunday checking out the Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie at the Rio Theater, because I felt like that would be the better venue to see it at.
Yeah, if Matt Johnson's there, that's going to be rock and roll,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Sentimental Value, I'm definitely looking forward to, because I just love
Trier and Renatsvi again together, yeah, again.
Yeah, and does Late Shift have Late Shift has Leonie Benesch in it, I think. It's the lead of that one, because I'm looking forward to that one. It Was Just an Accident, I'm looking forward to that. And I fit in the John Candy document, because they added a screening, so I managed to fit that one in as well.
It is on Amazon, like, next Friday.
Yeah,
can
I know.
Can I share a funny story about that stupid fucking movie?
Oh, jeez. This is a good story.
So, Spark rented the projector, which is a very fancy laser projector that is now going to the Granville Island stage. So, Deluxe had issues issuing keys because they kept thinking that the projector was somewhere else. Because it's a rental, so it goes around from venue to venue. So, they kept sending me keys for a projector that was supposed to be at the Playhouse. And I'm like, we are not the Playhouse. We've rented this thing. Like, talk to the guys at Cinematronics. They provided us the film, the projector. So they finally get their shit in order. They send me the keys that I need. And then 2 days later, they keep sending me, like, every 4 hours, I get a new set of keys for the John Candy at the Granville Island stage. And I keep emailing them. I'm like, this is not my movie, people. They just, no response. It's like the void. So I had to forward all of this to VIF Traffic, because I'm like, I don't know if you guys are getting your keys. You may not get to see this movie there at the rate that they're going. Worst thing ever. Fucking Deluxe, man.
So we're projecting the John Candy movie on one of your walls next week?
I mean, I don't have a projector anymore, so I don't know where you're projecting it to, but I don't have that DCB anywhere. The strangest thing.
DSLR or something? I don't know.
I know. The whole thing is very, very strange. I got some movies. I got a list of movies that I'm excited about.
I thought we were picking 5 movies each.
But I know.
Just I
prattled on too much. I was going through my I had my schedule as my template here, and it kind of screwed me up.
So I have 6. I is that okay?
Yeah.
You've already talked about Blue Heron, which is very high on my list. It's something that I really, really wanted to see from the moment I saw the still. So that is one of mine. I was so thrilled to see Decorado, which is Alberto Vasquez's new film on the list. It was added. Must have been a late addition to the Altered States program, because it wasn't there when they first announced the program. Alberto did Bird Boy and Unicorn Wars. His films have a very distinctive look, very political, dark animation, really, really like an outstanding filmmaker and storyteller. So I'm very excited to see this. It wasn't available to us, so I'm really happy to see that it's coming to Vancouver, because his work is really, really amazing. Nesting, Chloe Ling Harz's film, which looks amazing. I'm always up for stories about motherhood, especially if they have a slightly dark twist, and this one certainly looks like it fits that bill. I didn't realize that Anne Amond had a new film, so that is super exciting, because Night Number One might be one of the best Canadian films of the last 10 years. Peak Everything, which they're touting as a climate change romantic film. I'm like, okay, sure. I will take it. I don't know exactly what that means, but sounds interesting enough. Magellan, which is Lav Diaz's, I guess, biopic on Magellan and his trip to Malaysia, which stars Gael Garcia Bernal.
Yeah. It was a late addition too.
Yeah,
yeah, I
wasn't able to fit it in.
I've been burned by Mr. Diaz multiple times, and that movie is really long.
How long is that movie? I didn't.
It's like 3 hours.
3 hours.
Ooh, yeah. I still want to see it. Still want to see it. It's looking pretty good. And then the last film on my list is Honey Bunch from the writing directing team of Violation from a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. It was one of my favorite films of the festival that year. They were
Violation was good. Yeah,
they were an amazing discovery, and now they're back with a follow-up. So very interesting to see that. Hopefully I can get to see at least some of these. Those are my titles. See, I only had six. Technically five.
Okay, I only have five, so maybe I'll let Bill take it home.
Yeah, Steve did like 25. I'm gonna
be- I really fucked it all up. I got excited, guys.
I mean, clearly I want to see more than five movies because I already have tickets booked for like 20. So, but I chose not to focus on the ones that have hit all of the big film festivals. So if it played at Cannes, I'm not going to talk about it here, but I want to see it and I probably already have tickets. So here's looking at you, Joachim Trier. So the first one I want to see is Orwell 2+2=5, which is the new Raoul Peck documentary. And this one is looking at the latter part of George Orwell's life and his writings and how prescient and relevant his writings, and particularly 1984, still are now, or maybe are again now. So yeah, that looks really fascinating. And I loved his documentary on James Baldwin. So I have high hopes for this one. Keeping to the documentary vein, Laura Poitras has a new documentary that is out at this festival. And her last two, Citizen Four and All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, are two like all-timer documentaries for me. So I really want to see this. This one's called Cover Up, and it is about the PBS frontline journalist Seymour Hersh, who broke crazy stories in the U.S. The My Lai massacre in Vietnam, Watergate, the CIA spying on Americans. He is one of the journalists in the United States that has really spoken truth to power and held governments to account for their actions. So in this current climate, really curious to hear from him and see what he has to say. Apparently, Poitras has been trying to get him to commit to this documentary for like 15 years or something. So she finally got him on camera, and it's probably the best time to release this film. So very curious about that one. I'm also really happy to see Chandler Levack's new film. I really loved I Like Movies a lot. And this one has Barbie Ferreira in it, which just makes it even better. And it's filmed in Montreal. And I just think Chandler really, she writes about what she knows. And she is a movie and music nerd. And this is, these are all of these, like so far, these two films have really been based on aspects of her own life. And I think that they resonate really strongly because of that. And she's funny. And I think she's a really good storyteller. So I think this is going to be fun. And this is part of the night. So this is going to be like my best Saturday of the festival because I'm seeing Mylan Kicks. I'm seeing Nirvana, the band, the movie, the show. Or Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie. And then I'm seeing Marc Maron live along with his new documentary. And so like... And all of it is at the Rio. So I just live at the Rio on that Saturday and it's going to be phenomenal. What a day of programming. I loved that when it fit into my calendar. And then I've got to say Wrong Husband by Zacharias Koenig. I just think Koenig is an absolute genius. This movie just won the best Canadian feature at TIFF. And it sounds super fascinating. It's a historical drama about an arranged marriage like 4,000 years ago in an Inuit community. And things conspire against this couple actually getting together. So it's like, it's got all the elements. I think it's going to be a great film. And my number one pick for like, as soon as I saw it was released, I knew I had to snap up tickets, was Tasha Hubbard's Meadowlarks. So it's her first foray into narrative features. I think she's one of the best filmmakers working in Canada or anywhere these days. She tells really brilliant stories. And this one is actually a narrative feature based on one of my all-time favorite documentaries, which is available for free on the NFB site if you want to spoil yourself before you see it at VIFF. the documentary it's based on is called Birth of a Family. This film, Meadowlarks, also stars Michael Greyeyes and Michelle Thrush, both of whom are just genius actors. They're going to bang this out of the park. And I also thought it was super interesting that Betty Ann Adam is the executive producer of this film. And she was actually the main subject of Birth of a Family. So pretty cool that she was also involved in this sort of retelling of her family story. But it's brilliant. It's basically about four siblings meeting for the first time after they had all been separated through 60s scoop adoptions. So they had never met each other, never grown up together, and they meet for the first time on a trip to Banff. And I just thought it was one of the most moving documentaries I've ever seen, and really incredible commentary on how much nature there is. Like we really think that a lot of our character traits are based on nurture versus nature, but that movie just totally threw that out the window for me, because these people have such incredible similarities, even though they've never grown up together. And I just thought it was just astonishingly beautiful story about human connection and family. So that's me. Take it away, Bill.
Okay. So about a week ago, I texted a friend of mine who went to Sundance, South by Southwest, SIFF, bunch of festivals, you name it. He just went to TIFF. And I said, look at the VIFF program and tell me five movies you want to see or I should see. And they're in here. His like number one pick was Orphan, the new Laszlo Nemes film, who made Son of Saul a few years ago, absolute stone cold masterpiece.
Yeah.
One of the
annihilated best, me at fifth.
Yeah. One of the best films of the last 10 years. And supposedly this one is maybe even harsher.
Yeah.
According to him. Sign me up. Can't wait. That one's going to be great. If not harsh. He also said Surratt is the film that people are going to get their asses kicked by. Supposedly it's really intense. A lot of EDM playing in the background about a guy who goes to an EDM festival to find his daughter and shit just goes wrong. Supposedly it's incredible. And he said it stuck with him for days. Can't wait for that. Being the king of Canadian film, I had to talk about the foreign film nominee from Canada, The Things You Kill, which actually is a Turkish film, but I guess it was funded by Canada. So it's the nominee. Can't not say that. I'm all over that. That's going to be great. A few years ago, a director named Heilmar Palmason made a film called A White, White Day. He also made Godland a couple of years ago. He's back with a new film called The Love That Remains. I think he's a great filmmaker. It's super underrated. Those two last films he made are just incredible. I don't think people are sleeping on that one. Another film my friend said, The Sound of Falling, he says it's just haunting. And I can't wait to see that. He also said that Train Dreams is the film that nobody is talking about that's going to be on the most top 10 list at the end of the year.
Damn, so Joel Edgerton, right?
Yeah, he says he said it's the best film he saw at Sundance, and everybody was talking about it. And Netflix won a big, huge bidding war for it. So it's on Netflix next month. So if you don't have a chance to see it at VIFF, it'll be on Netflix. But everybody who I know who's seen that film has said it's incredible. He also said Pillion is really funny and really gross in a great way. The book says it's a giant orgy of sex and kink, sign me up. Alex,
I got my tickets already.
Yeah, Alexander Skarsgård wearing leather and dominating some dude. Sounds like a great movie to
dominating
me.
Harry Melling.
Yeah, I sounds great. I've seen the other Radu Jude movie in the festival, Dracula. Can't talk about it, but Continental 25 might be the quote-unquote normal Radu Jude film, if it's such thing. I don't think there is. The guy doesn't make normal films. So I don't know what that is. I'm still going to see it. I think he's a world-class filmmaker. He never makes a boring film. Never. My buddy also said that Tuner is super underrated and nobody's talking about it.
I heard good stuff out of TIFF.
Yeah, about a piano tuner who has incredible hearing and just finds out that he's really good at safe cracking. Sign me up. That sounds rad.
Yeah.
A movie called Kakuro, which is like the biggest film in Japan right now. It's doing huge box office in Japan. A big, long 174-minute epic with kimonos and, you know, war. Sign me up. That sounds rad. And last but not least, I really want to see The Plague. Everybody's talking about The Plague. It played Fantastic Fest last night and supposedly just destroyed. Yeah, I can't. That's the one Altered States film that I wanted to be there and was actually there. So Altered States is kind of weak this year, as everybody said, but that's the one I think is going to be great. That's my list.
I have a bunch of stuff to add to my watch list now. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Maybe that's my entire schedule right there, if I can get them all.
Are you actually going to be able to come, Marina, like more than like a day?
No.
Okay.
Probably not. Probably not. We'll see. We'll see.
Okay.
I got to save my holidays, man.
I know.
I have things I want to do.
We have to record. We have to record together.
Yeah, I know. It'll happen.
Will it though?
Why wouldn't it?
I thought we kind of said this like the last 2 years.
I've been at movies. What do you mean?
No, just like we said we were going to record, and none of us were in the room at the same time.
Well, this is not years. By. This is not by. Design. Yeah. I mean, I think we recorded with everybody, just not together.
Yeah, I saw 45 movies last year. You think we would have hit? Did I actually see a movie with you last year? That wasn't Emilia Perez.
Did you guys see Presence together?
Nope.
No, I saw.
Me and Marina did.
Oh, yeah, okay. I saw it with Steve.
Yeah. And Chloe.
Yeah.
Oh no, we saw Night Bitch together.
Yes. Oh, yeah. God. Couldn't have at least watched a good movie together.
Speaking of films Dan loved.
Oh, I've made him sit through a lot of crap over the years. I don't
know.
How he still trusts me to take him to the movies is beyond me.
I will give you my DVD copy of Manborg.
No, thank you. I do not need to be traumatized. Thank you very much.
So here's the question. I have a list here that's incredibly long because we won't record another podcast for almost a month.
Of what's coming soon?
What's coming soon?
Yeah.
I think we skip it for now.
I mean, we all know what we're going to go see this weekend.
Yeah.
What are we going to
see? I already got my ticket.
What's up next
weekend? I don't have tickets on sale yet.
No.
One battle after another.
One battle after another. The new Paul Thomas Anderson film.
Ah, well, I'll see it next week sometime.
Yeah.
I'm not watching anything this weekend.
What's happening? So the main movies we're gonna miss when we're at VIFF are Smashing Machine, Anomine, the new Daniel Day-Lewis movie, directed by his son. Good Boy, the film about Steve Stebbing. Steve hits Netflix.
Finally.
Yeah, I know, right? VHS Halloween, Roofman, Tron Ares, After the Hunt, House of Dynamite, If I Had Legs I'd Kick You, John Candy, I Like Me, Urchin, the Harris Dickinson directed movie Ballad of a Small Player, the new Edward Berger film. And It Was Just an Accident also opens. So a bunch of VIFF films open the next month, but we'll have a lot to talk about.
Yeah,
absolutely. We certainly will. Yeah, there's some great stuff coming up. We're finally into the, I shouldn't say finally, the movie year has been pretty good overall. Yeah. I've seen some stuff I liked. I'm ready for it. Sure. I have to say, I'm a little disappointed by the Tron Ares soundtrack.
Oh, that's okay.
I like
it. Yeah, it is not what I had hoped for.
Also, on September 26th, a Korean thriller called The Ugly comes out from Wellgo. So Steve will have that on Blu-ray in 2 months, and he can review it.
Yeah. All right.
So the next time we talk, we're going to be, is it going to be during VIFF?
Yeah.
What are we even? Holy shit. Okay.
VIFF starts next week.
Yep.
Well, I know I have a concert on Wednesday night. That's the beginning to my VIFF, I guess.
Me too.
Well, the movies don't start till Thursday, so you're good.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. So it's great. It's great. I am going to the movies on Thursday, which is great. But yeah. So stay tuned. We are going to record at some point over the next week and a half. If not all four of us together, some combination of the crew, but we will certainly try to get together to discuss some VIFF highlights as we go along the way. And then we will do a final wrap once the festival is over. Until then, and between now and then, where can folks find you? Where are you going to be posting your snippets of VIFF wisdom?
I am Bill Harris. I already have some stuff on Letterboxd under a separate, I only do lists, and my list for VIFF 25 has already started. I think there's like 8 films there. I've slacked. I think I've seen another 4 or 5 more that I haven't put up. I don't know if I'm going to be posting anywhere. I used to post on Twitter, but you know, fuck that. And I don't really post on Blue Sky. So, which is that Bill Harris, and I'm on Letterboxd at SoundJam 69. Yeah. I don't know where I'm posting for VIFF, but, stay tuned for podcasts, I guess.
I think I'm back on the Twitter fan wagon, so you can find my quick snippets on the Marina One, but generally just also Letterboxd at the Marina.
And you can find me on Letterboxd as at Melzy.
You can find me anywhere there's a social media at the Steve Dead. You can find my website, stevestebbing.ca. I do a show on there every week called What the Hell Should I Watch with my daughter Chloe. The episode on the 26th is going to be the last of the regular show as we go on our VIFF hiatus, and then a new episode of that won't appear again until October 24th. Yeah, expect a bunch of VIFF videos as I cover the festival for my 10th year and Chloe's 2nd year. So we're very excited about that. I'm also on Tremble the Horror Podcast with Kurt and Taylor. I am on Shane Hewitt and the Night Shift, which is out of Toronto on News Talk 1010 on the iHeartRadio network. I'm on Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern time, but you can also search that anywhere you get your favorite podcasts. And also you can go on CBC's website, CBC BC, or to their YouTube page, because I did his little spot last week on the passing of Robert Redford. And it was actually my first time being on CBC television before, so that was pretty cool.
It was pretty cool.
Thank you.
You can find links to all the things we talked about today at etcpod.ca. And until the next time.
Attack the planet.
Bye.